Nice, cheerful topic. Nice, easy idea. But it has a lot of wide-reaching ramifications. So we have the story of the Dibisu de Rav Huna. Dibisu de Rav Huna came to the Beis Din of Rav Nachman, and Rav Nachman was not sure what to do. He said, on one hand, I got to stand for her. What? Says, one hand, I'm going to stand for her, but then, Mistad ben Tanase de Baldina, then it's going to intimidate the other litigant. It says, Lo Eikum Akamav, I'm not going to stand for her. Eishes Chaver, Harehu, Hi Kechaver. And Eishes Chaver is just like a Chaver. And that's really, this is really the main place where they talk about such a topic. It's mentioned elsewhere once, one other place, but really, Maisa, this topic is not really discussed much throughout Shas. And it's also important to keep in mind, I mentioned the other day, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch don't cite this as a halacha. Although it is mentioned by the Taz, it is mentioned in other Sfarim, B'Shelos Yaivitz, Minchas Chinuch, and Sfarim talk about it as if it's definitely a real din, but Lamaisa, it's just important to note, for whatever reason, I don't know what the reason is, it's not in the Rambam and it's not in the Shulchan Aruch. So it's just important to keep that in mind. So he says, okay, Amalei L'shamei Tzev Afra Chalai Bar Avzo, go get a goose and throw it at me. B'shadi Lavoy, throw it on me. V'eikum, and I'm going to get up. Okay, so this was the great plan of Rav Nachman, a little bit more elaborate perhaps than it needed to be, but that was his big plan. So Tosfos over here asks a very simple question. If you look in the sugya of Mipnei Seva Tokum in Maseches Kiddushin, so one of the rules of Mipnei Seva Tokum is Ba'inan Kima Sheyesh Ba Hidur. You must stand in such a way that also contains Hidur. What does that mean? So if you look in the Gemara, it means that you're supposed to stand when the Talmud Chacham gets within Dalet Amos of you. Right? This is a big nafkamina in general, where you have a lot of times, any Talmud Chacham who comes in to your Dalet Amos, you're chayef to stand up for them, as long as they're begeder, some sort of a Meshuna Dika Talmud Chacham versus the average person. But then there's another din. There are two dinim when it comes to standing for Talmud Chacham. So there's this din, which is that when they're within Dalet Amos of you, you're supposed to stand for them. And there's a secondary din of a Rebbe Muvak. If a person has their own Rebbe, Rebbe Muvak is generally assumed to be someone from whom you've learned Rov Chachmaso. You learn the majority of your Torah from this person, and or many others have suggested that no, there's really nobody in the world from whom you learn Rov Chachma anymore, because we learn Rov Chachma from Sfarim. We don't learn Rov Chachma from Rebbeim anymore. In those days, if you didn't have a Rebbe, you didn't know anything. Because the Rebbe would, the only thing you could know would be the words of Tanakh. And then more than the words of Tanakh, you heard from your Rebbe, because there were no Sfarim. So it was very easy to have a Rebbe Muvak in those days. Nowadays, it's much harder to have a Rebbe Muvak. So I've heard different Rabbanim suggest that if you have a Rebbe who has a tremendous impact on your Derech HaLimud, on the way you analyze everything, so that's also could have a din of a Rebbe Muvak, because every sefer you open up and every sefer you learn, it's ke'ilu, you're learning it from them. You know, so they have a hand in... they have a hand in your learning to that extent, and therefore it could still be considered a Rebbe Muvak. But that's, you know, you could debate that. But one thing that Tosfos brings up and other Rishonim bring up is that there is also a din of a Rebbe Muvak by who? There's one other exception that's always going to be a Rebbe Muvak, which is what Tosfos, I think, refers to a Chacham Muflag, or what we would call nowadays as the Gdolim, right? So the Gedolei Ador, Shebechol Dor V'Ador, they have a din of Rebbe Muvak also, even if you never learn two words from them. I never heard one vort from, that's not true, I have. Um, I, I was going to say that I've never learned anything from Rav Aaron Leib Steinemann, but it's not true. I've used the Sefer Ayelet HaShachar on a few occasions. So it's a very nice Sefer. It just happens to be not my particular style. So I don't use it that often, but I have used it. I have one on Shavuos and Makkos. I think it's a combination Sefer. I've looked at it a few times. So, but Lemaisa, I wouldn't say that I've learned a lot from Rav Steinemann, but he certainly, I think most people would agree that he qualifies as one of the Gedolei Hador. So if he would be around, so there would be a different chiyuv to stand for him than there would be for a regular Talmud Chacham, which would be you don't wait till he gets into your Dalet Amos, you stand even kimelo einav, you stand even if he's anywhere in your field of vision, so you're supposed to stand for them at that point. So that would be a difference in terms of how much you stand for somebody. But for a regular Talmud Chacham who's not your Rebbe Muvak, you're supposed to stand when he gets into your Dalet Amos. And we learn that from the Pasuk, Mipnei Seva Takum Vehadarta Pnei Zakin. So the Gemara has a way of reading it where it says, Mipnei Seva Takum Vehadarta. Right? So it's if you punctuate the Torah differently, so you read Seva Takum Vehadarta Bo'inon Kima Sheyesh Bahidur, and that refers to Dalet Amos. That's what the Gemara says in Kiddushin. And therefore it's interesting that Tosfos asked the Kasha over here, why do we suffice with Rav Nachman standing up for the goose being thrown at him? That's not Kima Sheyesh Bahidur. What does he mean by that? The whole reason you're supposed to stand up when the Chacham gets into your Dalet Amos is what? Right, and so that he'll know you're standing up for him. So he's saying you want him to know that he's the reason you're standing up. So therefore, you dafka wait till he gets to your Dalet Amos. If he's 20 feet away and you stand up and then he walks by, so he doesn't know for a fact that you're standing up on his, for him. So it must be that you got to wait till you get into the Dalet Amos, and that's called Kima Sheyesh Bahidur. That's what the Gemara says. And that's all the Gemara says, because it's important to know what the Gemara doesn't say, because Tosos' third teretz here doesn't seem to be in conjunction with the Gemara. But Lemaisa, that's the Pashup Shot in the Gemara. I always wondered, nowadays, I think it's a good thing, nowadays, sometimes you get customs of the Jewish people that develop for no good reason, and then because of those, then you get the anti-custom people, and then sometimes you get something good that comes from that. What am I talking about? I mean, you go to weddings, so there's a goyish custom to stand up for a bride. That has nothing to do with Judaism, has nothing to do with anything. It's a non-Jewish custom that they stand up for the bride. I don't think they even stand for the chasen in non-Jewish ways. Again, let's take it one step at a time. So there's a non-Jewish custom to stand up for a bride. Nowadays, there's also a non-Jewish custom to have a whole parade down the aisle. There's a non-Jewish custom to have an aisle, right? There's a non-Jewish custom that when you go to a wedding, there's an aisle, right? There's also a non-Jewish custom that you parade ushers and, you know, anybody, you know, many, many people down the aisle prior to the kala coming down the aisle. And that's a sign of chashivas, whatever. So we Jews in America, because I say dafka in America, because in Eretz Israel I don't think you have any of this. Maybe at the American weddings in Israel you have it, but in Israeli weddings they don't have any. They dance straight from the badekin to the chuppah. They don't. You ever been to an Israeli wedding? They don't have aisles. They don't. Nobody shows up to the chuppah at Israeli weddings. Like they show up to the Sheva Brachos. It's a little different style altogether. But Lemaisa. They don't have ushers and aisles and anything like that, so they don't have this issue. But in America, we copied all of these things, you know, none of which is such a tragedy, but Lemaisa, we should know what we're doing. So then we started standing up for the kala and stand up for the chassan also. So then Limafreya, I'm saying Limafreya, we try to explain why we're doing this. Saying again, it's very important. A good rule to keep in mind is whenever there's a minhag or a custom, I differentiate between the two, but whenever there's a minhag or a custom that has more than five reasons, it's another way of saying, like, we don't really know the reason. You know, like, when you have, like, everybody weighs in and gives another reason for something, it means we don't know, and dare I say, oftentimes it means it was just copied from non-Jews. You have a good. If there's no source of it for it in Chazal, and there's no source for it in, you know, in the classical Rishonim, chances are it was copied from non-Jews sometime during the period of the early Achronim to the late Achronim. You know, when something pops up in the 16, 1700s, 1800s, I'm sorry to say that that carries a lot of different weight than something that the Tanaim and Amoraim were aware of. You know, I would have thought maybe. First of all, so long again. I'm a little bit of a Meshuggah for many things, but this is one of those things that I'm a Meshuggah for. And just important to have perspective when we talk about Jewish history. Jewish history, you know, American history. Let's take a step back. The Shulchan Aruch. Is that a recent sefer or an old sefer in Jewish history? It qualifies as a fairly recent sefer, right? Shulchan Aruch published in the 1550s or so. You know, by Jewish standards, the Gemara is an old sefer, the Mishnah is an old sefer, Tanakh is certainly an old sefer. You know, Torah is older than the Navi, older than the Ksuvim. Well, some of the Ksuvim and the Nevi'im coincided, but I'm saying in terms of Jewish history, you know, we date back thousands of years, right? So just think about what was going on in the world during the times of the publication of the Shulchan Aruch, meaning the Mechaber fled from Spain in 1492 as a kid, right? So he left Spain, eventually settling in Eretz Yisrael, and published the Beis Yosef and the Shulchan Aruch, the Kesef Mishnah, etc. So just by Jewish standards, if you want to consider the Shulchan Aruch to be a recent Sefer, so Christopher Columbus had barely discovered America, quote unquote, by the time the Shulchan Aruch was being published. You know, nobody even knew that that this continent existed at the time, let alone a country. You know, I don't think we can recognize a world that doesn't have the United States of America in it, right? And then we're talking about 1776, and in 1776, the United States of America wasn't really anything, right? So just have that in mind. 1776, we're talking about the time of the Noda Behuda, the Vilna Gaon, not even the early stages of that. We're talking about the second Tekufa of Achronim. We're not talking about, you know, Taz, Magen Avram, you know, first Tekufa of Achronim. We're talking about starting of the second Tekufa of Achronim, you know, when the United States of America even becomes a country. So when we say, like, it's an old custom, means it's been going on in the United States of America since the 1950s, like, that's not old by Jewish standards. That's old by world standards. Oh, there's an old custom that's been going on for the better part of 100 years. I'm like, that's like yesterday to a Jew. You know, so whatever. Lemaisa, that doesn't mean you should disgrace it. I would have thought, like you're saying, that if you're in the United States of America, the Minhag HaMakom has become b'chol Tfutzas Yisrael, to stand for the Chasan and the Kala. However, I have been at weddings where very serious Rabbanim who've been around a little longer, you know, I don't want to say them by name because I don't know if they make it officially public, although I have heard people say their names in this. You know, a very big Rabbanim, they bedafka, like, I wouldn't say they sink lower in their chair, but they do whatever you can do to not stand. And like, they give a little harumph every time everybody stands up for the chasan, every time everybody stands up for the kala. And then if there's anybody around them that will listen, they say, like, oh, when I was growing up, nobody did this. You know, so. And this is not like people who are generally disgruntled people. There are certain Rabbanim who are bederakla, like, very disgruntled and like to, you know, complain about things. This is not those people. This is like, you know, generally upbeat, positive people. But they very much do not like when everybody stands up for everybody. But why do I bring this whole thing up? Because something good has come from all this. Now you mentioned Rav Soloveitchik tried to be Masbir by saying that he wanted to say it's not because Chasen Dom HaMelech, right? Why? Because, first of all, the Pirkei de Reb Lezer says Chasen Dom HaMelech. So when is the Chasen Dom HaMelech? So the when is... So Rav Soloveitchik held that until you're standing under the chuppah, you don't have a din of a chasen. He said the din of a chasen is not when you get engaged. There's no halachic, you know, ramifications to someone who's engaged outside of the signing of the tanoim, which we don't even do anymore. So this chasen's not Dom HaMelech under those circumstances. Only once he's under the chuppah, then he's Dom HaMelech. That's why our Soloveitchik was makpid. You don't put the ashes on the forehead of the chasen until he's under the chuppah. There, in Eretz Yisrael, I think most people are makel on that, and they'll actually walk to the chuppah with the ashes on the makam hanachas tefillin, right? But Rav Soloveitchik was makvid dafka to do it under the chuppah, because you don't have a din of a chassan. And the lashon of the Gemara in Cheskas Habatim is ze ever mikla she al gabe rosh chassan, or something like that. So it says that this is the ever mikla that's on the head of the chassan. So therefore, you have to be called a chassan in order to fulfill that particular zecher l'churban, and thus you had to wait till you were under the chuppah in order to do it. Another nafkamina would be standing up. You don't stand up for the chassan domel l'melech, because he's not a chassan domel l'melech yet. He's just a guy walking down the aisle. And Rav Shechter told us that Rav Schwab was always very makbid to not refer to an engaged couple as a chassan and a kala. He would always refer to them as a meshudach and a meshudeches. So he said, because he held that chassan is a halachic term that we use to describe someone who's actually a chassan, not someone who is, just planning on getting married at some point in the future. So, okay, well, nice, that's neither here nor there. But that's why he said a different vart as to why they stand up. It's because we paskin that it's a mitzvah to get married, and therefore he's going, he's a ki'ilu a shliach mitzvah. He's on his way to go do a mitzvah, and the halach is you're supposed to stand for any shliach mitzvah. Right, it's discussed in the Gemara and Kedushin also discusses that. Do you stand up for every person going to do a mitzvah? Or are you mavatal from your work? So they bring up the case of, who's the famous case where everyone stopped working to stand up for people going to do a mitzvah? Mevi'i bikurim, good. So when they bring the bikurim, all the people would stop and they would make a whole parade out of it. They would stand on the sidelines and cheer for the people coming to bring the bikurim. So the Gemara says, nah, that was because to be machazik them so that they would come back. You know, people schlep in. You have these farmers. You have to realize what it means to live in a world with very little communication. So they had these farmers up in the Golan, up in the Galil, and they would be doing all this hard work, and then they have to take some of their best stuff and schlep it to Yerushalayim. So if they show up to Yerushalayim and everybody, you come from, Lakewood, Pennsylvania, and you show up in New York City and everybody's giving you the cold shoulder, you might not be so prone to coming back. So, here I am, I came to your fancy city and you just treat me like some hick and nobody gives me the time of day, so they might not come back next year. So we want people to want to come back, so they would stand. They would be mevatel from their work, and they would stand there, and they would cheer these people on and give them shalom aleichem, and they make a whole nice positive experience out of it. So this was when they brought the bikurim. But really, if you're not working, there is an inyan to stand for any person coming to a mitzvah. So Rav Soloveitchik wanted a taina. That's why we're standing for the chassan. We're standing for the chassan because he's on his way to do a mitzvah. So that, and he wanted to say, based on that same vart, that's why we stand up during Vayei Barach David. He's always wondering, why is there, the Shulchan Aruch, I think, writes, there's a minhag to stand for Vayei Barach David. What's the minhag? There's no inyan. There's no inyan to stand from, what? Right, so that was his beer was, because he said that there's also a minhag to collect tzedakah during Vayei Barach David, because we're getting to the end of Sukkot Zimra and Birkas. So obviously you're not supposed to be masik during Sukkot Zimra either, but it's less of a chamur inyan to be masik during Sukkot Zimra as it is to be masik during Birkas Kriya Shema, and certainly can't be masik during Birkas Kriya Shema or Shemone Esrei or even Chazaras Hashatz. So you can't really collect tzedakah during any of those times. So the best time to collect tzedakah is when you have some people in the shul. Best time to collect tzedakah is during Birkas Hashachar, when you're allowed to be masik. But okay, you want to actually get people to give. So you got to wait till people are in the shul, they have the talis and tefillin on, and they're not doing anything better like davening. So you start collecting tzedakah by Baruch David. People will actually give. So the custom developed to stand for the gabbai tzedakah when he was coming around. When he was coming around collecting tzedakah, that was how he wanted to say why people stand up for by Baruch David. Because really, there's no inyan to stand during the entire Pesukah Dezimra. Halachically speaking, there's no reason to stand during the entire Pesukah Dezimra. Some posts can say there's a minhag to stand for Baruch Shamar and Ishtabach. Some say Vilna Gaon says not even that. There's no inyan whatsoever to stand the entire Pesukah Dezimra. What? Is Az Yashar even part of Pesukah Dezimra?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's because of the minhag. You're not standing for Az Yashar, Medafka. saying it's the minhag is to stand by Baruch David, so you stay standing until the end of Yishtabat. But purely based on halacha, there's no need to stand during the entire Shluki December. Okay, so. So, and the others say, no, it's because they used to, as I think that, I heard this in the name of the Maril, but I've never found it. But I heard it from a fairly reliable source, that the minhag to stand for the chasan is based on the idea that the Tovei Ha'ir used to escort the chasan to the chuppah. He used to escort the chasan to the kal of the chuppah. So you weren't standing for the chasan, you were standing for all the people who would escort him. So as the minhag became to stand for the chasan. Okay. L'maisa, What? Why do I bring this up? Because something actually good came of it, which was you got enough naysayers to complain. But when people like to complain, they like to say something intelligent. So what did they say? They say, oh, they stand for the chosen and the kalah, a couple of young whippersnappers who there's no reason to stand for, but the altar zeder and the altar baba, when they come down the aisle, nobody stands for them. So you got enough complainers and enough naysayers that Baruch Hashem, we revived the mitzvah d'oraisa of mipnei seva takum, that you're supposed to stand for anybody over the age of 70, and therefore, it's good. It's a good thing came from it. Whether you like standing for the chasen, you don't like standing for the chasen, okay. But l'maisa, everyone agrees you should stand for the. You know, nowadays Baruch Hashem, you have some grandparents who are of chasanim who are under 70. That's even better. And Baruch Hashem, you also have great grandparents who come to. This is something. I'm telling you, I'm not that old, and it's something that when I was going to weddings, almost never happened. It's we're living in an amazing time in this regard. It's really beautiful. I don't know what it is. Unfortunately for me, I lost my last grandparent after my grandmother when she was. By the time I was ready to get married, she was completely not functioning. But my three other grandparents who I lost were when I was very, you know, much younger. So I don't know what it is. Every time I'm at a wedding, and I saw recently at a wedding, sometimes you see a great grandparent getting pushed in a wheelchair down the aisle, and that's beautiful also. But I don't know what it was. I saw a brother of the chassan escorting his great grandmother down the aisle. You know, under her own power, mamish, like looking like she was completely with it. I got lost it. I couldn't. It was a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. You know, it's we're living in a special generation. Then I'll get to these things. You know, so it's really chashuv to be able to stand up for these people and realize the type of simcha that these people are experiencing. Ki'ilu didn't used to happen to Jewish people. I wouldn't say ever, but you know, in my recent memory, it did not used to happen to the Jewish people. So it's a chash of a thing to be able to fulfill this particular mitzvah on such an occasion. But l'maisa, so I always wondered: are you supposed to wait till they get to your Dalet Amos, or is there no inyan to wait till they get to your Dalet Amos when it comes to standing up for the grandparents? So everyone always stands up when they come into the room. So I thought maybe the pshat is there's no inyan dafka to wait until they get to your Dalet Amos. Why? Because it depends. If you're paying attention to who's coming down the aisle, so then you should really stand up when they come into the room. It's not your Rebbe Muvok. So no, because the whole reason to wait for the Dalet Amos is to show that you're standing up for them. So everybody, they know why you're standing up. They're walking down the aisle, and you know, you're not standing up stam because you're just feeling like there are all these chairs set up. Obviously, you're supposed to be sitting. So when you're standing up, you're dafka standing up for them. They know. So that's a kima sheyesh bahidur. But if you're doing shnai mikra or whatever or dafyomi while they're coming down the aisle or talking, which is most people doing, so then you maybe should wait till they get to your Dalet Amos. So then you're actually, oh, there they are. I'm paying attention now. Okay, so I'm going to stand up now. So I thought that was a cute nafkamin in terms of kima sheyesh bahidur at a wedding. So, but definitely. I think there's room to say that when you're at a chasana, there's an inyan to stand up even when they just come into the room, because people are paying attention to who's coming down the aisle, and therefore everyone knows why you're standing, and it's ki'ilu, they're at the center of attention, kol zman that they're walking. Okay, whatever, that's a side point. But this is this yisod of kima sheyesh bahidur. So Tosfos brings up this idea of how could you say efrach alai bar avza, this is not a kima sheyesh bahidur. Standing up for a goose that somebody threw at you. So where's the Rav Huna's wife is not going to know that you're standing up for her. So Tosfos gives three answers. So answer number one. It says, Mikol makom ein iser. Shahari omid hoya. He says, there's no iser because he was standing. Answer number two. Dehi haisa yodas shebefanea amad v'shelo asa el mishum stimas taina de baldina. He knew, she knew, the Visa de Rav Huna understood what was going on. She was a sharp woman. She understood why he was standing, and she knew he was standing for her. It's just that the other guy wouldn't figure it out, and that's okay. And then answer number three, Ubalavachi says, Lo dami lo omid mipana bevesa kise bevesa merchatz tahasam leka hidur klal. He says, this is not dome to standing from somebody in the Beis HaMerchatz, in the Beis HaKiseh, where there's no Hidur at all. So if you have, depending on which edition of the Gemara you have, I'll give you 1 second. So some of the Gemaras are Mitzayin, Kiddushin Lam, Beis HaMedbeis. In my other Gemara, we don't have it. In this Gemara, I do have it. So basically, the Gemara says over there, there's certain places you're not supposed to stand for Talmud Chacham. If you're in the Beis HaMerchatz, and you're in a bath, obviously you're not wearing clothing, so thanks but no thanks. Like, don't stand for me. Like, if you're in the Beis HaKiseh, please refrain from standing. You know, like, I'm not interested. So there are certain times where we're simply not interested in standing for the person. Meaning, so Tosos' third answer is very schwer. Seems to be limiting the idea of Kima Sheyesh Bo Hidur to a case where it's really not a hider at all to stand for the person. That's where you're putter from standing. That's when we're worried that should be a kima sheish b'hider. But in normal cases, it's not really that big of a deal. So this I don't really know what to do with this line in Tosfos, because it seems to be against the Gemara. The Gemara, when the Gemara actually talks about a kima sheish b'hider, it's dafka talking about one thing, and one thing only, Dalet Amos. It's talking about a kima that the person will realize is for them. At least the way Rashi wants to learn. Right? So it's hard to understand why Tosfos is now basically saying, yeah, the whole union of kima sheish bo hidur is limited to cases where the person dafka doesn't want you to stand. And they don't want you to. So he's saying, it's not really that big of a deal to stand for them in such a way that it's not super clear. But because as long as it's not a Beis HaKiseh, Beis HaMerchatz type situation, so then it's not going to be an issue of Kima Sheyesh Bo Hidur. It's not necessarily the Pashup Shad in the Gemara at all. I understand why Tosfos brings it up, but nevertheless, the third teretz is very difficult. One way or the other, you have three answers in Tosfos. Answer number one is that as long as you're standing when the person comes in, it's not a problem. There's no iser. Answer number two is, no, it was a kima sheyesh bo hidur. Meaning answer number one is, you're right, it wasn't a kima sheyesh bo hidur. It wasn't. But, for whatever reason, it wasn't a problem. Answer number two is, it was a kima sheyesh bo hidur. And answer number three is, you don't know what kima sheyesh bo hidur is. You understand? So those are the three different answers in Tosfos. So I want to really, so since the third answer is a chiddush, basically just saying you don't know what kima sheyesh bo hidur is, I want to leave that out. Okay, but the first two answers lead to a lot of nice understanding of what's going on here. So in analyzing what's the difference between the first two answers, first of all, it's important to keep in mind, Rashi seems to concur with which answer of Tosfos. So if you look in Rashi, Divar Maskel Efrachalai, so he says, Ve'amod, Ve'lo yavin ze, Shebishvila amarti. Right, so that sounds black on white, like the second answer of Tosfos. Right? Tosfos says, she'll know what's going on, he won't know what's going on. So Rashi was meduyuk, like the second answer of Tosfos, that this guy won't get it, but she'll get it. right? So what's the difference between Rashi slash second answer of Tosfos versus the first answer of Tosfos? So the first Hashkafa Rishona, the first like simple explanation of it could be that it's based on a bigger Chakira, a more global Chakira of what is the basis for the whole din of Eishes Chaver Kechaver, right? We'll discuss this more properly next time. What is the din of Eishes Chaver Kechaver based on? Right? Is it, right? This is like ABCs of Lamdas, right? So when you have it's a pre-made sugya over here, so it's like a shtickle in the Minchas Asher. You know, so you have a pre-made Chakira already, and then you could, you know, learn up the whole sugya with that one... one Chakira. If you ever learn the Sefer pre-Moshe, anybody ever see the Sefer pre-Moshe? Happens to be a great Sefer, but like he always these packaged Chakiras and everything on earth has to fit into one side or the other side. You know, so that's, you can make a living just, if you want to make a living giving a shir, so you just read the pre-Moshe and then show why this one doesn't really fit in there, this one doesn't really fit in there, and like, can't oversimplify things too much. But the actual Lamdas is very good. Yeah, anyway, so what's the Chakira? No, it's Mistadman Tanase. He's not worried about Mistadman Tamase, but he's saying that there would be no Isser not to stand for her since he was already standing. You understand? So we'll get back to that. No, because you're raising a very important point, and that's going to be, I think, the Iker Chilik in the two answers of Tosos. But I'll just say what I think is not the Iker Chilik first, because it's an important Chakira anyway, and that we'll have to come back to, which is, what is the Yisod of Eishes Chaver Kechaver? Is it kavod to the Isha, or is it kavod to her husband? Right? Is it kavod to the wife of the Talmud Chacham? You say Eishes Chaver Kechaver, right? So this is back, goes back to the old, how do you learn the Lashon Kaf, Ki, right? We say Kavush Kimavushal. So what does it mean, Kavush Kimavushal? When you guys know what that is, by the way? It's a din in Hilchos Kashrus, when you, if you soak something for 24 hours, then it's Ki'ilu for certain purposes that it was cooked together with whatever it was in. For example, let's say you have a container. You have a metal pot or whatever. So you put the non-kosher food in the pot, and it's cold. So we don't have a problem. If you want to just pour it out and rinse the pot, then the pot is completely kosher. But if it was in there for 24 hours, then we say kovush kimavushal. There is some blia issues that have to be dealt with in the pot now. It's ki'ilu, it was balua somewhat into the pot. Similarly, we have other cases where if you soak something in a liquid for 24 hours, then it's a problem. A big nafkamina that comes up for kavush kimavushal is by maror on Pesach, right? Maror on Pesach, so let's say you use romaine lettuce for maror, like the Shulchan Aruch wants you to. So you put it, a lot of times people want to soak it in water to help with the bugs or whatever, get the sand if you don't, you know, if you want the, you get the hydroponic ones or the Gush Katif ones, and you get, it has sand on it, so you soak it in the water. So it's very important. Shulchan Aruch points out, don't let it soak in water for 24 hours, because there's a din called Kovash Kimavushal, and the Gemara already says that you're not allowed to use Mara that was Mavushal, because that affects the authenticity of the flavor. And therefore, you're not allowed to use anything that was cooked for Mara. So don't soak it for 24 hours. And you'll say, I won't soak it for 24 hours, but I have found that there are some people that have some kind of Masora that they soak the romaine lettuce in vinegar. They soak it in vinegar, because they say that'll kill the bugs better and that helps you clean it better. That is asking for trouble, because the Shulchan Aruch says that when you soak something in a davar charif, in something which is has a kick to it, like vinegar would probably be on the list. So if you soak something in brine or vinegar or something like that, then it could be that we would say kovash kimavushal much quicker. We wouldn't say kovash, we wouldn't wait a full 24 hours for kovash kimavushal. We would say kovash kimavushal even in 18 minutes perhaps, or the amount of time it would take for the water to boil under those circumstances. So that is very little time. So if you're going to soak something, if you're going to soak your romaine lettuce in vinegar, do it for a very short period of time. Not 24 hours might not be the number you're looking for. You might be looking for a much shorter period of time. Anyway, what's the point of bringing this in? If we say kavush ke mevushal, right? We say kavush is like bishul. Is there an iser de oraisa to soak milk and meat together for 24 hours? The answer is no. Is there an iser de oraisa to cook milk and meat together? Yes, right? So we don't say kavush ke mevushal to the extent that it's mamish bishul. If you soak cold milk and cold meat together for 24 hours, it's not cooked to the extent that you can't sell it. It's not cooked to the extent you can't make dog food out of it. You're allowed to get hana, so it's not really like bishul, but it's a little bit like bishul for certain halachos, right? You say miktsas hayom kikulo in Hilchos Avelus, right? So what is it, kit? Is it mamish like the whole day? Right, we have rubo kikulo. We have all these different kit in halacha. Sometimes the ke is very, very similar. Sometimes the ke is less similar. So we have eishes chaver, ke chaver. An eishes chaver is like a chaver. So does that mean that she is ke'ilu, the chaver mamish, and we're giving her kavod? Or is it as if she is the... we're giving kavod to her husband, but it's through her. You understand? So that's something which is a... something we're going to have to work on. We have to work on and try to figure it out. That's the simplest chakira you could start with. So how would this play out in the first thing? So you could suggest that the first teretz of Tosfos says what? That it's Eishes Chaver Kichaver would be which way? Eishes Chaver Kichaver would be which way? Again, what did Tosfos say? Says, yeah, you're right. You don't get to fulfill the din of kima sheish bahidur, but at least you're not standing for her. It's not an isser, right? So how would that work out? What? She could be mocha. We're not really talking about mechila right now. But she wasn't mocha. He stood for her. Well, I thought like this. It's not mukhruch at all, but I thought like this. If you say the first answer that there's no isser, so then you can really go either way. And you could say it's the kavod of the chaver, or it's the kavod of the isha. Why? Because if it's the kavod of the chaver, so okay, at least you're standing. If it's the kavod of the isha, okay, at least you're standing. But according to the second pshat and Rashi's pshat, which one does it have to be? What? So mstama, it has to be her kavod. Why? Has to be her kavod. Why? Because the whole idea of standing up for an if it's all about kavod for the husband, so it would have to be much more overt that you're giving kavod to the eishes chaver. Other people should understand it. The husband, perhaps, if he was around, would understand it. The fact that she understands it is not necessarily good enough. Right? So therefore, it could be that the first answer could hold either way, but the second answer holds its dafka kavod for the isha, not the chaver. Yeah. Right, right. So that's one of the issues. One of the issues with putting too much emphasis on this side to the extent that we're going to be koveya different halachos. It's part of the problem with that side. Although, as we'll see, it's not going to be mukhrach anyway. Because, first of all, what does it even mean? If it's the kavod of the husband, as long as the wife knows, maybe she'll then tell her husband that they gave her kavod. Or maybe the chap is that the husband wants that the people should be mechabed his wife, not that people have to know that. He doesn't care that everyone knows that people are mechabed the wife because of him. He just, the kavod for him is that people should be mechabed his wife. Right? So that's, as we'll see, it becomes harder to say definitive statements just because we hold it's kavod for the chaver, not for the isha. Okay, so just keep that in mind. But nevertheless, the real reason I don't want to go with this mahalach is that we'll see the das rov harishonim for sure is that it's not kavod for the woman, it's kavod for the husband. So I don't necessarily want to automatically assume that The second teretz of Tosfos, which is also the sheet of Rashi, is pinholing, you know, the lumdus into, oh, it must be that it's dafka covered for the isha, not covered for the chaver. Right, so I'd rather not say that. So rather, I would want to suggest a much more local hakira, which is okay. So I wasn't going to go there. Let's hold off on that. Okay, that's an important thing, right? Pashtus is it's for the person receiving the respect, right? Maybe when it comes to the Rebbe Muvak, it's different, right? That's probably, in other words, that's the chilik by Kimlo Einav versus Dalet Amos. Kimlo Einav, he doesn't even know you're standing for him. You're standing because of what they did for you, as opposed to a Stama Talmud Chacham who never did anything for you. Is you're standing because it's covered for their Torah, right? That's the pashtus. But without going there, I think the simple chakira that you could go with, you have one. No, so it's definitely covered at Torah. It's definitely covered at Torah, because the Gemara in Kiddushin points out that the whole reason you're standing for the person is Torah delay, right? That they could be mochel, it's their Torah. It's definitely covered for the Torah. The question becomes, is it covered at Torah or covered at Chacham? Right? So we'll try to talk more about that next time when it comes to the concept of Eishes Chaver, La'achar Misas HaChaver, which is what Rashi and Tosfos and a lot of the Rishonim point out, is what we're probably talking about over here. That is after Rav Huna already died. Sorry. He's saying that maybe there's a concept of Kavod HaTorah versus Kavod of the Chacham, right? As we'll see, the Gemara tells us you're supposed to be careful with the Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning. And the Gemara compares the Talmud Chacham who forgot his learning. Let's say, unfortunately, sometimes... Ah, very good. Right? So sometimes you have a Talmud Chacham who they lose their mind when the time they get older. You know, generally speaking, it's very good. The Mishnah says it at the end of Kiddushin, and also it's Ma'aseh B'chol Yom that you see learning Torah is an excellent, excellent, excellent segula for keeping your mind, your wits about you till you're very, very old. But sometimes it doesn't work out that way. Sometimes a person has they lose their mind, even though they are, you know, no less toiling in Torah than those who keep their mind. It's just Hashem runs the world. He decides when it's going to be and when it's not going to be. So sometimes it happens that a person loses his mind. And he loses all of his Torah. It's not his fault. So the Gemara says you have to be careful, and they compare him to, like you said, the Shivrei Luchos. He's like the broken Luchos. We say, yeah, the Shivrei Luchos were also in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Shivrei Luchos were also maybe even in the Aron Kodesh, right, depending on who you hold like. But nevertheless, there is an inyan to give kavod to a chacham even after he forgets all of his learning, but maybe not the same level. But Lemaisa, what could you say is the machlokes between the two answers of Tosfos? So, the first answer in Tosfos holds there's one mitzvah and one. I'm sorry. The first answer in Tosfos holds there's two dinim in Kavod HaTorah, and the second answer in Tosfos holds there's only one. Right. The first answer in Tosfos wants to say a briskervor. Right. There's tzvei dinim in standing up or a kavod for Torah, which is the and it's clear in the words of Tosfos there is a mitzvah to give kavod to the Torah, and there is an iser to not give kavod to the Torah, right? There's an iser of e-kavod. Right? E-kavod. Who was named e-kavod? We're talking about learning more Navi the other day, right? So who's e-kavod? Ichabod? Not exactly. One of Eli HaKohen's grandchildren, right? Eli HaKohen, I don't remember if it was the wife of Chafni or Pinchas, but Eli HaKohen had two sons, and the Aaron got captured and Chafni and Pinchas were killed, so the wife gave birth to a son and she named him Ikavod. Right? It's great. It's great to go through life when your name is dishonor. But I don't know why that name caught on. When I was a kid, there was a story, The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, Ichabod Crane and the Headless Horseman. Ichabod is like a real Christian name. I don't know if it was common in those days, but I don't know. Don't name your kid Ichabod. It's Ikavod. It's because because of all the terrible things that were happening to Klal Yisrael at the time, so that's why he got the name. But there's an iser of e kavod. There's an iser to not give kavod, right? Sometimes we say there's a mitzvah to do it, And there's no isser not to do it. And sometimes we say there's a mitzvah to do it, and there's an isser not to do it. That seems to be what Tosfos is talking about over here. And in fact, I had this in my notes from a long time ago, which if you would have asked me, did I know this Bir Halacha beforehand, or did I know this Mishnah Berurah beforehand, I would have bet you money that I did not know it. Recently I saw it again. I was going through the halachas with the Dirshu, Dafyomi, whatever. So there's a comment by the Prima Gadim that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, and they're talking about a gabbai giving out aliyos. And they said that if you give the aliyah to Nama Aretz, in place of a Talmud Chacham, so he says, and the Mishnah Berurah quotes it. It's a tiny little quote in the Prima Gadim, but the Mishnah Berurah quotes it. He says, "Lav shapir osim ve'ovrim al iser." Says they're not doing the right thing and they're violating an iser. What iser are you violating? Doesn't sound like there's a real iser. So, but the truth is, this Tosfos is a strong smach for that comment in the Prima Gadim. That Tosfos' first answer sounds like not only is there a mitzvah to be mechaved the chaver or the eshes chaver, there's even an iser to not be mechaved that person. So this is a very interesting thing. You have an iser in addition to the mitzvah. And obviously the second answer of Tosfos holds, what are you talking about iser? You can't invent isurim where there are none. Can't invent, there's a mitzvah to do X. There's no iser to not do X. Obviously, every bittul mitzvah saseh is the, you should do the mitzvah saseh, and you shouldn't not do the mitzvah saseh. Right? But that doesn't mean we invent a new iser every time you don't do the mitzvah saseh. Okay. So this is, based on this chilek, it really is a nice segue into a very famous comment of the Minchas Chinuch. You guys, how many people know this Minchas Chinuch by Hilchos Sukkah? Okay, good. No, I just wanted to know which way to say it over. Okay. You guys know about what a mitzvah haba b'avera is? Right? So a mitzvah haba b'avera, it comes up in a few places, but specifically the most common place that it's studied is in the beginning of Lulav HaGazal, beginning of the third paragraph of the Sefer Sukkah. So mitzvah haba b'avera is when you steal something and then you try to use it for a mitzvah. That's one good example, right? There are a number of other good examples. It's also, the technical term mitzvah haba b'avera is sometimes misused. It's not every time you do an avera and then you can do a mitzvah, is it a mitzvah haba b'avera. In fact, most times it probably isn't. Okay, so l'maisa, in this case, we talk about lulav hagozel is a mitzvah haba b'avera. However, earlier in Maseches Sukkah on Daf Tes, there's a discussion of a din d'oraisa of sukkah gezula. If you steal a sukkah and then you sit in that sukkah, so the Gemara says we have a gzeiras hakosuv that's mema'it sukkah gezula. That you're not yotzei the mitzvah if you sit in a sukkah gezula. Okay, so that is the gzeiras hakosuv that you need to learn a din d'oraisa from. Now, Tosfos on Daf Tes asks Akasha and says, I don't understand why you need a pasuk to be mamayit sukkah gzula. Just learn out from, because it's a mitzvah haba b'avera. Right? You wouldn't have had that sukkah had you not stolen it. So why do I need a special din d'oraisa to exclude a sukkah gzula when in fact I already have a din of mitzvah haba b'avera? That's Tosfos' kasha. So Tosfos, on Daf Tes, answers a big chiddush, perhaps, that the din of mitzvah haba b'avera is only a din midrabbanan. So if I would have just had mitzvah haba b'avera, I would have said, you're not yotzei sukkah midrabbanan. But now that I have this gzeiras hakasuv, you're not even yotzei sukkah midoraisa. You hear? So that's a big chiddush. Tosfos in Lula, what? Chag HaSukkos Ta'asa L'cho Shivas Yamin L'cho L'ma'ute Gzula. Right? So So that Tosfos is so sir a number of other comments of the Rishonim, including Tosfos themselves in Lulav HaGazel, where they imply it's not so, that it strongly implies that that mitzvah ba'a ba'avera is a din d'oraisa. And there's definitely other Rishonim will hold mitzvah ba'a ba'avera is a din d'oraisa. So based on the fact that most people don't like that Tosfos in Sukkah and Daftes, Minchas Chinuch wants to try his hand at a different answer. And this is a very famous comment of Minchas Chinuch. We say Minchas Chinuch in Hilchos Sukkah, this is what everybody's talking about. Although, the Minchas Chinuch all over Shin Chafei, I happen to be a big fan of Minchas Chinuch in general, but Minchas Chinuch in Shin Chafei is fantastic. Like, really, certain things he does a job, certain things he doesn't, you know, he doesn't do such a job on, certain things he really does a job. He really did a job in Mitzvot Yeshiva B'Sukkah, as, you know, some of the more famous ones, you know, obviously like the ones in the beginning, Bris Milah, Peruvu, those he really did a great, great, great job. And, you know, others he did, he says nice things, but this is one of the ones that are, Shin Chafei is one of the ones that everybody gives it two thumbs up. So in Shin Chafei, so he has a long piece in the Machon Yerushalayim edition, it's Sifkat and Yud. In the old edition, it was Sifkat and Tes. Machon Yerushalayim reorganized everything in the Minchas Chinuch. If you go to the library, there are a lot of old editions of Minchas Chinuch. Those are very difficult to read. You can get through it. And in fact, the one on the Bar Ilan is based on the old edition. Because I think Machon Yerushalayim retained the copyright to the new one. So the Sifkatan won't really match up necessarily to whatever Minchas Chinuch you're actually using, because I don't think you can even get the old edition of Minchas Chinuch anymore. But they reorganized all the different pieces, put it in a much more logical way. They took out all the crazy Rosh Yeshivas, and it was mully typos, and it was just they really did a tremendous service to Klal Yisrael. So Lamaisa, in Sifkat and Yud, he has a long piece over here. He talks about Sukkah Gzula, and then he gets off on a side point. He says Vida, right? I'm not even going to read it now because I want to finish up. But he says, definitely check it out inside. Very important. And he says that there's two types of bitul mitzvah saseh. He says, for example, let's say a guy wakes up in the morning and he's saying, tefillin, not so much. I'm not wearing tefillin today. So that guy was mevatel a mitzvah saseh of tefillin in a very serious way. And he's violating, he's chayav a korban ola for being mevatel mitzvah saseh. Ola's mevatel mitzvah saseh? I forget these things. I think korban ola, you bring from mevatel mitzvah saseh. I don't know, don't hold me to that. I could be wrong. So he was definitely mevatel mitzvah saseh. Let's say then he says, all right, so now we took care of tefillin. What about talus? Right? Tzitzis. So he's not wearing, he's wearing regular American style clothing. He's not a member of the Three Musketeers. You know, they wear those ponchos, those four cornered begadim. You guys holding Three Musketeers at all? So they wore those things that were definitely chayv and tzitzis, or he's not gonna wear a beged that was very common in those days. So he says, forget it. I'm just not gonna wear tzitzis today, I'm not gonna wear talus today. So was he mevatel mitzvah saseh? Not really. Because you're only mevatel the mitzvah saseh if you put on a dalad kanfos and then you don't put tzitzis on those dalad kanfos. So why do we even wear tzitzis? So I'll tell you why we don't wear tzitzis. I'll tell you what's not the reason. What's not the reason is what the Gemara Menachos says. Now why am I being annoying like this? Because there is a reason quoted in the Gemara Menachos, which is very true, obviously, which is that there is, so the Gemara Menachos talks about people who bedavka don't wear dalad kanfos so that they're not chayiv in tzitzis. And it says that, listen, you can't say that they're being mevatel mitzaseh, but they also get punished be'idon rischa. Right? So get to this week's parsha. Be'idon rischa. When Hashem gets angry about something, so then this is a throw-in. You know, sometimes you get in a fight with somebody, and this is, by the way, a good lesson for life. I think Rabbi Aaron Feldman, sorry, that was not on purpose. Rabbi Herschel said yesterday, he said, the guy reads The River, the Kettle, and the Bird. You ever heard that book before? So it's a nice book by Rabbi Aaron Feldman from currently, he was not in Eretz Yisrael when he wrote it, currently in Eretz Yisrael. So it's a very nice book to read before you get married. And one of the things that he says, which is excellent, excellent advice, is if you ever get in an argument with your wife, which obviously will happen, but don't then take old arguments and rehash them at that point, which is standard human nature to do. But it's the worst piece of advice you could ever. You want to argue about something? Argue about that thing. That's it. You want to do this? I don't want to do this. I do. You don't. That's it. That's all we're talking about right now. Right? So he says, don't then say, and also you did this, and remember that time? No. We don't remember anything. We don't know anything. We're talking about this. Okay? So that's a very good piece of advice. Kodesh Baruch Hu does this about tzitzis. Meaning the Gemara says, you do something wrong. Kodesh Baruch Hu is like, I can't believe you did that. And another thing, how come you're not wearing any tzitzis? Right? That's a throw-in. You understand? So that's what the Gemara Menachah says. You get punished be'idin rischa. When Hashem's angry at you for something else anyway, so then he throws in that particular thing, and this guy doesn't even wear tzitzis. So the post can point out that that's not the reason to wear tzitzis b'zman hazeh. That's talking about a time in the Gemara when everybody wore beged dal kanfo stam. That was the style. Everybody wore a poncho or something like. When I say poncho, I mean those like those Mexican things. So I remember years ago, probably about 7-8 years ago, Chaim Feigerman, he dressed up like a Mexican guy for a Purim. I saw him in YU, and he had tzitzis on the poncho and everything. You know, that was a standard. That's a standard Mexican garb in American stereotypes. So Lamaisa, what? With tzitzis of Adi. So that's it. If the style is to already wear a poncho or to wear a beged dal kanfos, so then you dafka say, no, I'm not going to wear a poncho. I'm going to wear American clothes, even though I'm living in Mexico, because I don't want to be chayv in tzitzis. That's when you get punished b'idin rischa. You understand? That's how the post can point out that the Gemara Menachos doesn't even apply. So why do we wear tzitzis anyway? The simple answer is, I think the Mishabura points this out, that we wear tzitzis because what's your problem? You don't like mitzvos every second? Are you that great? You're such hot stuff that you think you can get away with an extra without millions of extra mitzvos over the course of your lifetime? You know, it's besides Arizal holds midivrei Kabbalah that there's an inyan to not even walk down Amos without tzitzis on. All right, that's fancy Arizal Kabbalah. Okay, I'm not so fancy. You know, but in addition, just saying, like, how could you say you don't want all those freebies? I don't know what zechuyos I have or I don't have in life, but I'm basing all my money on the freebies. You know, I'll get up to Shemayim. I don't know if I got any real big mitzvos, but I know I have, you know, tens of millions of tzitzis mitzvos. I know I have like all the cheapos, you know, on my side. So why wouldn't you want, like, if someone says you'll do something and you'll get X amount of dollars every day that you do it, like, nobody would say like, oh no, but it's so uncomfortable. Like, you know, you'll pad yourself with the money and you'll feel a little bit better about it. You know, you'll be less uncomfortable. But that's the real reason why that we wear tzitzis. It's not the reason of bittul mitzvah saseh, and not even the reason of the Gemara Menachos of Eden Rischa, because that's only talking about when the style was to wear a dal kanfos.
So
okay.
Why wouldn't you have a mitzvah wearing tzitzis alone?
No, so that's why we do wear mitzvah. We do wear tzitzis at night, because according to the Rosh, you're chayv in tzitzis at night. No, when you go to bed, it's different, because there, l'chulei alma you're potter, because the Rambam holds you're not chayv in tzitzis at night, and the Rosh holds you are chayv in tzitzis at night, but you're not chayv in tzitzis on the types of clothing you'd wear at night. We call pajamas. Right, so if you change to your pajamas, and then you're not wearing normal clothing anymore, so you're putter from tzitzis l'kulei alma. Now you're not wearing daytime clothing, and you're also it's not daytime.
So you
never have to wear tzitzis. That's what I'm trying to say. It's a mitzvah if you do it. So some poskim will say if you're playing sports. There's no, unless you have a specific beged that you would wear when you play sports. It also depends how much you sweat. Like, if I think too hard, I get all sweaty. You know, like, if I move, like, a little faster than the slowest person on earth, I get sweaty. So, like, if I would wear a talus katan while I was playing, it would be a disgrace. You know, some people, they don't get so sweaty. So you have to really figure out who you are and what it looks like when you're wearing it. But you're not, you could also wear tits in the shower if you want to. Saying it's just not the time and the place. You know, you don't go into the shower with tzitzis on, but you could. It's just not necessary. You understand? As long as they're not going to be disgraced, as long as you don't, you're able to be shomer them properly. Okay, so let me just point out this Minchas Chinuch, so I gotta go. But the Minchas Chinuch says this, that's the difference between not wearing tefillin and not wearing tzitzis, right? That if you're not wearing tefillin, you're mevatel mitzvah say. If you're not wearing a talis katan or a talis gadol, you're not chayiv and tzitzis in the first place, but you're not violating the bittel mitzvah say of not wearing, you know, of not wearing tzitzis. You understand? You just don't, quote-unquote, get the mitzvah. You hear? So it says in Minchas Chinuch, that's the difference between sukkah gzula and a mitzvah baba avera. Well, how so? If it's a sukkah gzula and you eat in the sukkah gzula, then you're mamish not eating in a sukkah b'chlal. You know, to add the brisker lumdus, the brisker lashon, excuse me, it's a psul in the etzem chefts of the sukkah, and mamela, you're not makayim anything, and it's ke'ilu you ate outside the sukkah. So you're eating in the four walls and the schach of a sukkah, but it's as if you're standing outside of the sukkah and you're actively violating the mitzvah saseh. Mashenkei in the mitzvah haba b'avera, what's the mitzvah haba b'avera? That you don't get the mitzvah. You're not makayim the mitzvah. It's a psul in the kiyum of the mitzvah. You want to call it the kiyum of the gavra, fine. But it's not a psul in the cheftza of the sukkah. You can't claim the guy is outside the sukkah. Because he's not. He's in the sukkah. And the sukkah is a kosher sukkah. But it's a mitzvah baba avira. And therefore, he's not mekayim the mitzvah. You find this in Rabbi Chanan, has this in the Kovet Shurim also. I didn't give it to you in the Maamar Makomos, but you find this in the Kovet Shurim in the second Chelek. He talks about it a little bit. He says that the whole yisod of mitzvah baba avira is similar. I think he's medame to kavana hafachis, when a person has negative kavana to mekayim a mitzvah, right? Where he says that if you do the mitzvah and you have negative kavana, so you did the mitzvah, you just blocked the kiyum. It says that's what mitzvah habab avira is. You did the mitzvah, but Hashem says, I don't want this. This is a mitzvah habab avira. And you don't get the kiyum. But nobody can yell at you and say, oh, you're a shegetz, you ate outside the sukkah. No, I didn't. You just didn't get the mitzvah, yeshiv b'sukkah. So chaps a big nafkamina on the first night of sukkahs, but the rest of sukkahs, you know, don't make a bracha, it'll be a bracha levatala. But lemaisa, if you ate in the sukkah, in a sukkah that was a mitzvah baba avera, the whole sukkah is nishkeferelech. You don't get the mitzvah, but you're not mevatel the mitzvah either. You don't, quote unquote, get the avera of eating outside the sukkah. That's the Minchas Chinuch. So he says that's the chilek between the Gemara saying we have a gzeris hakasuv sukkah gzula versus a mitzvah habab avera, which just blocks the kiyum, but it's not kiyuliyed outside the sukkah. Now, so we're going to hold here, but we're going to find that if you look in Rosh Shlomo Zalman's first tshuva in the Minchas Shlomo, he is not at all a fan of this Minchas Chinuch. He thinks that there is no chilek whatsoever between. He says, once you're, quote-unquote, not getting the mitzvah, you are violating the mitzvah. There is no such middle ground. He says, Mamela, by tzitzis, when you can not be chayv in the first place, so then we can have a middle ground of, you're not makayim the mitzvah of tzitzis, but you're not doing anything wrong either. He says, but kol zman, that you're not actually fulfilling the mitzvah, you are absolutely violating the mitzvah. And you could be sitting in a sukkah, eating, and you're not, and it's ke'ilu you're eating outside the sukkah. Says that's a kosher sukkah. But if it's a mitzvah baba avera or any other kind of, and he wants to go so far, I believe, as to say, if you don't have special kavana, if you don't have the special kavana of the Nani HaKavod, not only are you not fulfilling the mitzvah, it's kiyu, at least according to Bikuri Yaakov, who says, Ma'aki b'dievet, you're even eating outside the sukkah. You're violating the issue of eating outside the sukkah. A big chiddush, but he has a great raya from a super scary comment by the Bi'ur Halacha about people who grab a pair of tzitzis when they go up to get an aliyah. And hu adinami, people who put on tefillin every day. And what on earth do I mean by that? So I don't want, I really should go, but I just want to make this point. The Bach, the famous Bach that says you're supposed to have special kavanah for the sukkah, is actually in Hilchos Tzitzis, and it's also in Hilchos Tum. There are three times the Bach says you're supposed to have special kavanah. Sukkah is the most famous one, but Tzitzis is another one, and Tfillin is the third. And the Bikur Yaakov holds that this is Ma'akiv B'dieved for all three mitzvos. Which means, when you put on Tzitzis, you're supposed to say, in your mind at least, I'm having in mind that the special kavanah for the mitzvah of tzitzis is a zecher to the taryag mitzvahs, laman tizguru, right? You're supposed to have in mind that the tzitzis represent the taryag mitzvahs. That's what it says in the Torah, right? Similarly, when you put on tefillin, you have to have in mind the zecher to, it's ki'ilu, a zecher to kol Torah, kula Torah, says laman tiyye Torah Hashem beficha. And the same thing we say about sitting in the sukkah, Zecher Lanani HaKavod, Aman Yehidu Doris Eichem, we say it about those two mitzvahs also. In fact, if you look in the Sefer Minchas Asher, Shalos HaTshuvos Minchas Asher, I think the first tshuva of the second chelek is, how come in the whole L'shem Yichud that people say for putting on tefillin, it doesn't once mention the actual kavanah that you have to have? It's super fancy kavanahs about, you know, being the Yachid, the Yudei, and the Vavei, that's fancy stuff. But this Pashut, you know, being a Jew, kavana of Laman Tiyye Torah Hashem Beficha, you really have to have it. It's important. You know, it's, and according to the Bikur Yaakov, it's even Ma'akev B'dieved. If you don't have the kavana for these things when you put on Talis and Tefillin, so it's Ma'akev even B'dieved. So it's important to try to have that kavana. Every time you put on Tzitzis, have in mind Laman Tizguru, and every time you put on Tefillin, remember Laman Tiyye Torah Hashem Beficha. So, okay. Yeah, the Mishnah Berurah quotes that's the Prima Gadim Shita, that if you don't have the Kavana, so you're still Yotzei, but it's not as good, right? But the Bikur Yaakov argues, he says, you're not Yotzei, and the Rav Shlomo Zalman, I haven't seen the Tshuva in a number of years, but check it out. I made some copies, and we actually have a copy of the first Chelek. We have all the Minchas Shlomos here. So check out the Tshuva. It's very Gishmak Tshuva anyway. And whatever, check it out, and you'll see, I think he sides with the Bikur Yaakov. I think he goes against the Prima Gadim on that one. So, yeah. All right, it's definitely a big chumrah